Good morning. Steve Hocking yesterday described this period between the JLT and the season proper as the holding pattern. For coaches, they're not quite sure how they're going to perform. They get toey. I think you could extrapolate that to the entire footy community. The JLT isn't a sample size. It's a glimpse. It's a first impression. It looks like there's more time and space in the middle to create and scoring is increased, but we haven't seen the tactical rollout to counter such gains just yet. The double 50s were jarring because on the weekend, three players couldn't remember what they were doing. They'll figure it out. It's unlikely to rip the fabric of the game. And apparently we're going to the mattresses for the runners. Who would have ever imagined we'd go to the mattresses for the runners? Last year they were blatantly blocking space and coaching on the field. I think there was a consensus that we wanted them thrown out. Now they've been stopped from doing what they were doing. Last year it was decided the coaches had ruined the game and needed to be curtailed. Well, now they've had one aspect of their arsenal reduced but hardly removed. Yet apparently the rights of the runners are the paramount cause right now. Really?
Even out there last week, I was turning around looking for the runner just to get a bit of clarification on something, and you had to run off, and then so it could be 10 minutes before you can tell your teammates what you're actually doing. So, as I said, I love the idea they're trying to limit the runners out there, but I still think you've got to give the coaches a little bit of leeway just so it's not a shambles out there, and because that affects the look of the game as well. If you've got 18 players thinking 18 different things, it's not a good look for the game.
I'm looking forward to having access to the runner again during quarters, so hopefully that'll happen over the next couple of weeks. Because all the players are making noise now, and the theory was that they're giving it back to the players and their instinct. The players are saying we need direction, we need to hear from the bench. So I think they'll listen to the players, and unfortunately it's, you know, it's taken that to bring it back, but I'm sure that over the next couple of weeks we'll going into round one, we'll probably be able to use our runner a bit during quarters.
They still have access to the runners, and I sort of hear these discussions around, well, and maybe they should have a cap limit on rotation. The difficult thing to do with that is we've got so many examples last year of runners, you know, just spending enormous amounts of time out on the ground. It's actually hard to cap it the way that we've introduced it, which is after each goal, it equalises the field.
Had Steve Hocking flinched yesterday, then there would have been cause to say the AFL was making this up as they were going along. But rather it's been more than 12 months' work, and it's gone through excruciating levels, game analysis and then the broadest imaginable consultation, the competition committee, the AFL executive, and then finally the commission, which didn't approve everything that was put in front of it anyway. The 9 rule changes and modifications haven't been made on a whim, and ultimately they'll be judged on whether the game is enhanced. And we won't know whether the game is enhanced until it's played for real, whether it's a better version of what we've had over the past couple of years. For all the negatives, the positive vibes coming from the players are unmissable, thrillingly so, and maybe never more so than Nat Fyfe on 360 last night.
What we're seeing is a more pure 4v4 midfield battle, which plays to my strengths, running out the front of the square and having long penetrating entries or shots on goal. When you rest, you can rest out of the cage and try and make that a pure one-on-one battle. So I think the rule changes will suit players like me and Dangerfield and Martin and Paddy Cripps and the more contested beasts, and I'm hoping that's the case.
And that's a prospect that could light up season 2019. If that's what we get, then I suspect the odd double 50, which players will figure out, and they won't happen, or they'll be like the unicorn. And the runners, the focus there, they will quickly ebb away. Let's hope so, at any rate. Malcolm Blight's going to join me shortly. Nick Riewoldt in the studio. You think the AFL's had problems? The NRL has. So the NRL's endured the worst imaginable off-season. It's the eve of their season. Todd Brett Greenberg is going to be in the studio in Sydney with me after 10 to go through all that's taken place, the steps that they've taken, and whether the playing of football tomorrow night represents the circuit breaker that the game so desperately needs, or whether the damage that's been done to the game will be enduring. We'll take your calls throughout the morning, 1300 736 736. You can shoot through your texts 04. 0433 98 11 16. It is Geelong membership day today only. You can purchase a 6-game Cats home and away membership for the price of 3 games. And to that end, we start with the Cats coach, Chris Scott. Chris, welcome to SEN.
Thanks, Sherry. Good morning.
So Steve Hocking describes this as the holding pattern where everyone gets a little bit toey, particularly the coaches. Do you feel a little bit like that?
I do. I suspect in some ways he's talking about his experience with me. and this it's a familiar feeling, this one, on the eve of the season, especially after you think you've had a pretty good preparation. In some ways that increases the anxiousness because there's a lot going right, and around Geelong especially there's traditionally high expectations, and we certainly share them, but it does give you a reason for pause when you look around the competition and you see the state of the other teams as well. It's clearly a new era that we're in of evenness around the competition, and I would say a new era of competence with the lesser teams in the competition. There wouldn't be many sitting back thinking that they don't have some opportunity to climb up the ladder at least.
Is it just a cold reality that you don't quite know how you'll go?
I think so. I think that's the realistic position to be in. And I think it's a smarter position for at least a coach to be in, to be thinking about the challenges ahead rather than being complacent, you know, in the knowledge that, you know, your team's had a good preparation. If things go perfectly for you, that you should win more games than you lose. I think that's a naive position to be in the context of the new season.
Have you actively looked to improve on what took place last season, where you spent the bulk of the season between 7th and 9th, and I guess the comp told you where you were when you were beaten in the elimination final?
Yeah, we have. We've worked really hard on that. And I think, you know, most realistic judges, and probably if you remove sort of Geelong people from it, probably have us in that group again. I think the group's bigger than just sort of 7th to 9th. I think it's, you know, somewhere between, you know, 2nd right down to 15th or 16th. I think there's a case to be made that all of the teams in that bracket are pretty even, and that, you know, there's going to be some things that go your way or go against you that are going to make a really big difference. But the things that we can control, we've been quite aggressive in trying to shift. So that goes from our list management strategy, where we targeted a few players that we thought could help us where we had a bit of a deficit. And then that's been pretty well documented by the people that have been watching us over the pre-season. We thought there was a serious flaw in our game style, in that our forward half numbers, for the most part, were quite poor. I guess the obvious exception is scoring. I think there was a point that separated 3rd and 4th for scores 4, and we were, I'm not sure, I think we were 4th, so by a point. But a lot of our numbers around the forward half were pretty average, and a lot of that related to personnel as well. We've had some injury troubles over the last 3 or 4 years that have just meant we haven't had much continuity in that area. So the signs are good. I mean, obviously we haven't delivered on that when it really counts, but the signs through the pre-season indicate that we've made some gains there. And overall, the way we play, we thought we needed to tinker a little bit. And again, the signs are good, but it hasn't really been put to the test.
How exhaustive was the search for cause and then the search for answers after that elimination final?
Yeah, really exhaustive. Not that hard to find, to be honest. I mean, if you were to sum up our season, you'd say there are a lot of positives with a very inexperienced team in terms of, you know, the most important numbers, which are obviously scores for and score against. We were number one defensive team, 4th in terms of attack, but failed dismally in the big moments against big oppositions. So it's very hard to recreate those situations of training and in your preparation. And I would argue that the most challenging thing in the competition today is getting yourself into a position where you are in those big moments. I mean, the average teams in the comp don't find themselves there too often. So if we are good enough to do that, then the real challenge for us is making sure that we do all the things, and it's multifaceted, clearly, but we need to do all the things that mean you stand up in the big moments.
Who's responsible for the intensity at the start of a game? So if we looked at a couple of those big games last year, your Geelong were poor starters. Who owns that? Who have you put that on, and who can change that?
Well, like most really important things in our footy club, everyone is a simple answer. I think it's naive, and it's not very productive to finger small parts of the organisation or individuals. There are degrees to which certain segments are more or less responsible, but the approach that our coaching group have taken and the 22 that take the field is that collectively we need to make sure we're better in those moments. So I just think it's a superficial and it's too easy a route to take to say, well, it's our senior players or it's our guys in the centre bounce, because again, if you wanted to isolate that final last year against Melbourne, the first 7 or 8 minutes were actually well and truly on top in the game and blew some bad chances and then gave up some easy chances, and before you know it, we're 29 points down. So to say, oh, this was the reason why, I think is that's the domain of the casual observer and that doesn't have the time or have the experience to put into the analysis that we do.
How close to a team is on your whiteboard in your office for round one at the moment?
Pretty close. I don't think we'll be a difficult team to predict for round one. We do have a couple of guys that we'd like to be available that that probably won't make the line. Off the top of my head, Zach Tui, Scott Selwood, Lockie Fogarty, who played a lot of footy for us last year. But with only the two genuine pre-season games, we've played a pretty stable team for those two rounds, so it'd be an unusual move for us, and have to be a really good reason for us to bring players in from outside of the squads for those two rounds.
Has Jordan Clark done enough to push his case to debut at the start?
Well, he's got to the point where it'd be hard to push out. I think it's got to that stage. So less about him having to force his way in, but he forced his way into our pre-season team, and as I said, we decided to play pretty stable teams across those two games, and he certainly played well enough. The argument could be made that he played well enough to hold his spot, but I must say, with over a week to go, I'm not really in the business of guaranteeing 18-year-olds a round one start, but I'd prefer to be in Jordan's position than someone that didn't play those first two rounds.
How impressive has he been walking into the club and mounting his case?
Impressive in every way, Jared. And I must say, the thing that's impressed me as much as anything is that Jordan's background as a young athlete was really one that favoured cricket, probably more than footy, and especially through the summer months, he really has never had a pre-season because he was so focused on his cricket career. And I say it's rare, but it seems to be happening more and more with our talented young athletes. He had the genuine chance to choose an elite path in both sports, and fortunately for us, he chose footy. But in my estimation, that suggested that because he hadn't had a pre-season, he might have had a bit to learn in terms of footy, a bit to learn, and a bit of work to do in terms of his physical conditioning. But every time we've raised the stakes with him, he's been able to step up. So it's looking like it was a really good pick. And, I think that we're clearly one of the things that we just haven't delivered on as a footy club over, well, my time at the club, this is my ninth season at Geelong, we just haven't been able to turn our first round picks, albeit later sort of first round picks, into really good, consistent AFL players. And that may sound as if we're putting a bit of pressure on Jordan, but I think he's more than up to the task.
We spoke about the forward setup before and the deficiencies from last year. It's a substantial change in personnel, is it not? I presume Rowan, Dalhouse, you've sort of declared that's where Ablett's going to be, and Radaglia comes back after the broken leg. It feels like in what now is a six-man forward line, you'll have at least four different to the way you'd been lining up last year.
Yeah, so if you look, it's hard to work out how we lined up last year. We played the same forward line, and when I say that, I mean a group of six or seven players twice last year. That was in the last game, the final, and the last round of the home and away season. Every other round before that, we had to shift them around a bit. But there is a case to be made that our starting six forwards round one, if you take out Radaglia, who got injured after five or six rounds, Tom Hawkins could be the only player that consistently played there last year. So that's a bit daunting in some respects because, effectively we have no choice but to go with a different look again. And with a different look comes the challenge of cohesion. But it's really exciting as well because we have prioritised that part of our game and put a lot of work into it. So, especially as a coaching group. And I think the genuine supporters that watch the subtle shifts closely, that's an exciting part to watch as well because it will be more obvious to those people than it would be to the casual observer.
So I preface the question around the first 6 weeks of the season by acknowledging what you said, is there aren't the poor teams that maybe the divide has been over some years, but you have a pretty ferocious start. Collingwood, Melbourne, Adelaide, the Giants, Hawthorn and West Coast through those first six. Have you... when that fixture landed, does that change any of the approach to the start of the season? Is you'll have to be right on the money right from the start?
A little bit. I mean, I don't think if we looked at the draw and thought, okay, that's a relatively soft start, and I mean that in the true sense of the word, it would have to be a relative soft start. You certainly wouldn't think, okay, well, we can just ease into our season. I was interested in Damien Hardwick's comments post their second JLT game in that he thought they were maybe too forward in their preparation last year and have backed off a little bit this year, trying to time their run a little bit more. It's not a luxury we have, that's for sure. Our view is that, or our hope, I guess, is that we'll get better as the season goes on. But we know we need to come out of the box and play as well as we possibly can early in the season because of that draw. I mean, it is tighter. There are no easy games, but I think it's still pretty clear that some games are harder than others. And start with probably two logical favourites or two of the logical favourites for the Premiership this year. And it doesn't ease off with a five-day break into Adelaide at home, who we fully expect with their experience profile and the quality of their team to play as if last year was an aberration.
Do you think, you mightn't care, do you think there's a perception that Geelong will fall this year?
I sense it a little bit. You're right, I don't care that much. And I actually don't read or listen as widely as I used to. But I've been of the view pretty consistently over a period of years that at some stage the people making those forecasts will be right. They'll just say that they're a little bit late. And a similar thing goes probably for Hawthorn and Sydney, that the three teams that over the last decade have been able to find a way to finish high enough on the ladder for, I think, most people around those footy clubs to think, well, this is our spot and things would have to go horribly wrong for us to fall further than that. My view is that that's a naive view. In the new era of equalisation. But again, the expectations are high for us and we embrace that. So I don't think we'll get any extra satisfaction if we are able to say for at least one more year that, the predicted slide wasn't as severe as some of the experts forecast.
On the broad issue of the way the game's presenting into the season, Chris, where are you in the runners debate?
Well, I must say, this time of year, it seems to me that if you're a complainer, you complain. and you know that the same things get rolled out every year, and you know, we're all, I think we should be getting sick of them by now. I mean, illicit drugs comes up at this time of year. It's almost like there are people who sort of read their notes from 12 months ago and roll out the same stuff. I mean, rule changes tend to generate an emotional response. But I think one of the big differences in the last 12 to 18 months has been the level of consultation and the level of research that's gone into these changes. And I suspect that, and even when it comes to a twilight grand final, I suspect that some people mistake consultation for approval, when coaches and players don't have the right to dictate what the rules should be. A consultation means your opinion will be listened to, but the people charged with deciding how the game's set up have the ultimate authority. So I think their intentions are good. It was really interesting, that grab from Nat Fyfe. I agree completely. As a coach, I mean, I will give my opinion that if you offer me the chance to have more control over the game, I'm going to take it with both hands. But I'm not sure the average punter wants to see coaches control every minute of every game to the nth degree. I think I've said it publicly many times. I mean, I have a slight defensive bias to my coaching, but I think that sort of flies in the face with the AFL's bias. They have a bias towards attacking free-flowing footy, and if they're going to make our lives harder as a coaching group to defend, a bit harder for us, but better for the game, I can live with that scenario.
Has it prompted plenty of creative thinking?
It has. Some left-field attempted solutions to some of the problems, but it's clearly almost every rule has made it more difficult to impede teams who have the ball or have a bit of momentum. And again, more difficult for us, and in some cases almost impossible. I mean, if you take the centre bounce rule in isolation, there are some things you can do to mitigate the risk at the centre bounces, but then you expose yourself in a big way in other areas. So we've seen some teams try to roll their wingers back a little bit further to the point of the square, and that was a really easy thing to do last year because you can bring a forward up from the other end to cover the free winger. But if you roll one back this year in round one, the opposition are going to have probably a very good player, say a steel side bottom, all by himself on the wing with no opportunity for one of your forwards to come up and cover him. I would argue that the risk is too great for any reward you get for the winger rolling back behind the ball. But, it'll be interesting to see the way that it plays out. We've talked about it a lot, but I couldn't be more honest than to say that I don't think we've come up with a solution that we've got great confidence in.
Chris, thanks for your time this morning. Enjoy the last weekend off, and we'll see you Friday week.
Can't wait, Jared. Thank you.
Chris Scott.
We really appreciate the support of our members. We ticked over 50,000 just recently, and we can't promise that we're going to be perfect on the field every week, but we can promise that we're going to have a go. We're really well prepared, and it's going to be an exciting journey for our supporters no matter what happens. So jump on.
Good luck with it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Chris Scott, the Geelong coach. It's Geelong Cats membership day. Today only, you can purchase a 6-game Cats home and away membership for the price of 3 games. Plenty of callers lining up. 1300 736 736. Your say after the break.